Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nice sniffle to start us off, Pete. Loreboys here. Welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast, where we talk about the stories beneath our favorite made-up stories. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer. With me is Peter O'Donoghue.
Oh, hi, everybody.
And James Miller.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. That's not James Miller. That's Woody from Toy Story.
No, it's the shark.
It's the shark, right? Yeah, shark. it was such a convincing howdy, 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 I'm Woody that I thought for a second that it was Woody. Yeah, you'll have to forgive me.
the one tail-shaped boot gave him away, though, because he doesn't need two boots.
They say the best way to learn impressions is to see other people doing impressions of the person.
Yes.
So use the shark to get a better Woody.
To get a better Woody. You had me fooled. So
speaking of better Woodies, I admire some sharks for having two penises.
Yeah. Speaking of better Woodies, happy Valentine's Day.
Also that.
Last week.
Your date was a shark, am I right, ladies?
So welcome to the show, everybody. For people who don't know, we're a jokey kind of, I wouldn't say comedy, definitely not comedy, definitely not informational, but we're like a jokey middle ground somewhere in there, where we talk about made-up stories that we like, basically.
Yeah. You wouldn't LMAO, but you might breathe out of your nose.
Exactly, yeah. A sharp exhale while driving to work. for anybody new to this show, this is your warning. This is a part four in a multi-parter.
Yeah.
So probably not the best place to kick it off. That said, of the four that we've done so far, this is the second best to start with. Where number one would be the best, number two would be terrible, number three would be terrible, and number four is okay probably to start on.
Okay.
So we've been,
that metric confused even me.
I aim to confuse, honestly. So I'm glad we're on the same page then. We've been talking for 2 months, for a while now, for my last four episodes about Elspeth, a noble white planeswalker from a Phyrexian insane asylum, now on a mission to find Karn, a silver golem, and hopefully put an end to those pesky Phyrexians I mentioned. But we're going to diverge a bit to talk some more about setting before jumping into another story episode.
Right. Because we've covered some of her homies and people that she's worked with. We covered, I want to say, Ashani Goldmane. He's a lion man.
Johnny.
Johnny.
Very close.
Johnny, yeah. And Venser, who was a regular human who lived in a swamp and thought all these horrible Phyrexian machines were just neat little curiosities that he liked to hobby about with, basically, in his awful shack.
Exactly. So I think that the better reading would be the Elspeth episodes that we've done already. A great bonus episode to listen to, if you want even a bit more context for this one, would be Karn and the Phyrexians. And if you have
Jamie's episode about Pac-Man, that's a great bonus. It's unrelated, but I enjoyed it.
also very good. They're all good. Am I right, fellas?
Dude, I forgot I did a Pac-Man episode.
Sure,
there's
did.
That whole story game too. Yeah,
I remember nothing from the Pac-Man episode. All I remember is the emote that we have in and the artwork, because it was my Twitter avatar for so long. Was the Kafka Pac-Man?
Yeah, we all drank beer and watched the playthrough of like the adventure game where you like Pac-Man lives in a house that is the shape of his own head.
Oh, that sounds very vaguely familiar.
Yeah. That was after the episode, so we were pretty deep into a case at that point, I can guarantee.
As we often are. I guess that's a good segue into, hey, I know we've been promising a mailbag episode for a long time. We're going to get drunk and read your letters and maybe play some games on Twitch, and then we'll release recording of that episode to some people at some time, indeterminate when all that stuff is going to happen. But except for the actual event, most likely this Saturday, February 20th on twitch.tv/theloreboys.
The Lore Boys, yeah.
Yep. So yeah, you can put a pin in it. Time to be announced. I'm going to guess evening, so probably starting around 6 EST, maybe a little later, maybe a little earlier.
I only drink between 6 and 7 a.m., so.
Yeah, I drink I drink from 6 till 12 because beer has carbs in it, and I'm technically, I would technically turn into a gremlin if I drank carbs after 12, so.
Okay.
And you got a carb load for your busy afternoon, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, got a lot of driving to do. I want to have the energy, so I'm just drinking all these carbs.
Yeah. Drink right up to 12 noon is when I stop.
Then I take a nap until the next day from 6 a.m. to 12.
But yes, February 20th, 2021. Jump in our Discord. Go to theloreboys.com/about and jump in the Discord, because that is the best way to stay as close to inside our brains as you possibly can.
Yeah, for better or for worse. And there's probably a link to our Twitch on that page. I honestly don't remember.
There is. Yeah.
But enough about that. Let's get started talking about Magic the Gathering, the thing that we're all here to hear about, huh? The thing that we all love. Oh, should we give Jimmy a moment of silence to do his face cream here?
Are you waxing your beard?
He's moisturizing.
No. My nose is drying out. I changed shampoos, and it's been a nightmare.
I mean, maybe you're afflicted by the mycosynth and you're turning into a Phyrexian, James. Have you ever thought of that?
Dude, I know you wanted to get to the content. You just as easily could have got to the content.
This is a little taste of what a live recording is going to look like. Yeah. It's going to be a shit show.
For the record, I never want to get to the content more than I want to talk about you moisturizing your face. But
very important.
Look, Jamie's spent 29 years avoiding crow's feet, and he's not going to start now.
Yeah, I also changed my light bulbs, and I feel like I'm going to get a sunburn. So this is SPF 45.
The sun went down like 2.5 hours ago.
Yeah.
So
these LEDs are bright.
So a quick reminder of where we left off last time. Elspeth and Koth had found a man named Venser, who Peter mentioned, working on infernal Phyrexian machines. And decided that, hey, that's not cool. Koth dragged Venser to Koth's homeworld of Mirrodin, which was once called Argentum, which we do talk about in the Karn and the Phyrexians episode a bit more at length. But we'll talk about it a lot. We'll talk about what it becomes. It becomes Mirrodin. And the last episode, we ended off revealing the fact that it does eventually turn into New Phyrexia.
Right.
In terms of mechanical game talk and shop, which I know you two love, the card sets had come out for whatever 15 years. There was an entire invasion block, which is was all about the Phyrexians and all about the evil Yawgmoth who led them. Mm-hmm. Yawgmoth eventually killed by Urza. I don't know if we ever actually talked about Urza killing Yawgmoth on our Urza episode. But
no, we did the Brothers War specifically.
I think we did up to the Brothers War, and then I said eventually I'd talk about Yawgmoth dying. Never ended up getting there, but the Phyrexians were pushed back, but never fully defeated, kind of like cockroaches, kind of like mold. Like, it's really hard to completely obliterate them. If there's even a small trace of them left, they'll keep reproducing and keep growing. And eventually they sunk their teeth into this land, Mirrodin. Today we're going to talk about Mirrodin. We're going to talk a bit about the transition from Argentum to Mirrodin to New Phyrexia, and then we're going to end up with some kind of setting the scene for New Phyrexia and where our adventures are as they exit the meat shaft, as we called it, looking out over the Great Furnace layer of New Phyrexia.
Yeah, and then after that, we'll probably have 4 more episodes setting the scene for another scene that we'll finally get to.
Well, they're gonna leave the meat shaft. They're gonna go to the first village, and we're gonna need an episode to set the scene for that village, the Volshock village. Yeah. You know, and
right?
You know, it adds up. if you like these episodes, I guess this is a good time to mention it. Like Peter said, join the Discord and let us know, because if someone doesn't tell me to stop, I fucking won't. So, Mirrodin's environments and inhabitants mixed organic and metallic from sharp razor grass. that grew fast enough to impale unfortunate humans, to oceans that flowed with an unusual form of quicksilver, even the most delicate flower was made of metal.
That is horrible. Quicksilver is slang for mercury, mm-hmm. if people don't know that. I only found out recently, so it's very tremendously poisonous.
Yeah. The comics get much, much more different when you realize that the Silver Surfer was giving everyone mercury poisoning.
Getting taller when it was warm and then giving everybody poisoning.
So the intelligent beings who walked Mirrodin were no less strange, an odd mishmash of muscle and steel. Artifact creatures also walked the planet. Some seem to have come about naturally, while some have been artificially created. So there's kind of this... there's life on the plane. You guys will remember last time in the Memnarch episode... that or when we talked about Memnarch rather during the last episode, that he was kidnapping different biological beings and trying to create planeswalker sparks with them to turn himself into a planeswalker.
Yeah.
So we'll talk a bit more about Memnarch. We'll talk a bit more about who he is, what made him tick. We won't talk about his death. That could be the next episode, not talking about Elspeth, but talking about a character named Glissa who eventually goes on to kill Memnarch. But we're going to ignore that for this episode
for the moment, this plane has somehow like naturally occurring like cyborg life, I guess.
Yeah, it has some naturally occurring cyborg life and some robots that were made by other robots or made by humans, because there are tribes of elves, there's tribes of humans, there's most of them imported by Memnarch. Most of the humans were imported by Memnarch and humanoids all brought here to simulate organic life. Or just produce organic life that he could maybe harvest planeswalker sparks from to take them for himself.
Yeah, he imports all the humans before he puts them in a big bin and steps on them with his bare feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to get all the sparks. Yeah.
It's only champagne if they're from the Champagne region of France, right?
Ah, yes. Is this a authentic Menach? No. It's just simulated. It's just fizzy wine.
Yeah, yeah. it's simply fizzy Merari. yeah. So we talked about last time they were headed to the core of Mirrodin. They didn't end up actually reaching there because the Phyrexian infestation was too great, too vast.
They had like hollowed out the planet or hollowed out the plane to create like a Phyrexian construction laboratory, right? Where they were like harvesting biological material and fusing it with their mechanical bodies and creating more of them.
Basically, yes.
Okay.
But the core itself was an accessible place before the Phyrexians showed up. So when it was still Mirrodin, there were these tunnels, the five gigantic tunnels, which would lead to the hollow center of Mirrodin. The tunnels themselves were called lacunae. I don't know why. Why not just big ol', but there was one for each color. So there was a white tunnel, a red tunnel, a blue tunnel, a black tunnel, and a green tunnel.
Okay.
Each tunnel leads to Mirrodin's core. The core itself, called Tavrakshan, or Hall of the Eternal Sun by the Leonin, was used by Memnarch to control the outer world. So it was kind of like his base of operations. Memnarch spent most of his time there. Presumably Karn did as well. It's kind of just easy access to any other part of Mirrodin. Mirrodin has lands or like terrain that is shaped by mana colors, just like a lot of other planes. And the tunnels each correspond to, they come from each of those areas, essentially.
If you could survive at the center of the planet, or at the center of the plane, rather, the quickest point to anywhere else on the planet is obviously directly from what is essentially the intersection, like the center of town, is the closest place to everywhere else.
Exactly.
It's like a subway or metro station. And they have the colors on ours, too. When I take the green line, I feel all the life coming into me.
Yeah,
we have the green line is, other than the blue line, is the worst. But yeah, we have the green mana line, we have the orange mana line, yellow mana line, and the blue mana line, right?
Yeah. And maybe sometime soon, the pink mana line.
That's never going to fucking
happen. So at the center of this globular space, suspended in the air, is a blinding circle of light. This ball of pure mana is known as the mana core. Mirrodin's core provides a brilliant and otherworldly sight with shining metallic surfaces everywhere, reflecting the intense light of the mana core. So, again, it was the plane of mathematical perfection. Karn found a vacant plane and crafted it to be Argentum, the plane of mathematical perfection, right. where he just made everything machine, everything metal, you know. So the core is no different. It's this shining silvery metal all over the place, and it's just got this blinding white light at the center of it, probably just like giving Jamie a sunburn. Yeah.
Yeah.
You need your face cream before you go in. like I've said a few times now, before the plane was called Mirrodin, it was sculpted by the silver golem Karn, who named it Argentum. It was during Karn's time that a troubling vision arose. So we know that there was distress in other parts of the multiverse while Karn was hanging out here. Great time rifts were opening up across Dominaria, affecting the flow of magic across the infinite planes, and Argentum was no exception. Karn, either before this or sometime during this, would send the Mirari to Dominaria to monitor it, to spy on it, and it would eventually break, turning into this weird MacGuffin-like item that grants wishes. But I don't know how a spy satellite turns into a genie lamp, but it got there somehow, you know.
it was really just a like more of a coincidence than anything, you know, like how like there are like like older science stories of just like, wow, yeah, like we clumsily accidentally discovered nitroglycerin when the first guy blew himself to smithereens, and then the second guy was just like, wow, that's gonna be valuable at some point. It just so happens that it was completely accidental.
Damn, our spy.
The whole franchise is called Magic. I think we can let this one go.
Yeah, true.
No, god damn it.
It feels like a big leap, even for Magic, James, okay? you could basically say a spy satellite and a genie lamp are like two different planes of existence. You can't even reach them. You know what I mean? These rifts are opening up in Dominaria. They're affecting the flow of magic to all other realms because Dominaria is the center of magic in the multiverse. And Argentum is
one about above Venser's home, or was it close by or something?
There was one above Venser's home, yeah. And they ended up getting sucked into it by Venser's teleport machine, and they met Nicol Bolas on the other end of it, and ended up like accidentally freeing his spirit, which had been trapped in the meditation realm by a guy.
Japanese sounding one. Like the guy with the most normal sounding name.
Exactly. So these rifts in Dominaria are affecting Argentum. Strained by the fluctuating magic from Dominaria's rifts, the core began to shed spheres, which rose like great stars into the sky above the plane. Four in total, one for white, blue, black, and red. They came to be known as the moons of Mirrodin. Some people called them the suns of Mirrodin. But basically,
depending on their horoscope, basically.
Yeah, exactly. You'll notice green is suspiciously vacant. And if we ever talk about Glissa, we'll talk about the green sun.
Okay.
But again, hard to fit into this episode with everything else. All the other fun and exciting things we're going to talk about on this episode, right?
Huh. I've been called suspiciously vacant as well. It's
your walls certainly are.
Yeah. You're like when Neo in the Matrix meets God, and you're just sitting in that like vacant room, like.
Yeah.
Oh, you do have like a really good beard going these days, like trim, good shape. You could easily be the architect from the Matrix.
Yeah.
There we go. I snap my finger, and empty beer cans and PC boxes flying into my apartment.
Yeah, yeah. Entire liquor store shelves come sliding through the empty space, just rattling glass along the way. Like, oh, fantastic. So while big and moon-like in many ways, these weren't actually moons. The most notable reason why not is they don't seem to have a gravity.
Well, this plane doesn't have an FBI to put them up
right.
There.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so whether or not real moons.
Because the real moon is a fake moon, is what you're saying?
No, I've been told so many conspiracies recently that I get them all mixed up, and none of them make sense. So,
bit of both.
It's not actually a planet; it's just a hole in the big blanket the government has over all of our Earth.
Exactly.
I heard the moon was owned by McDonald's, and it was actually made of the inside of chicken McNuggets before they were fried.
Oh. So Amy over here laughing like Edna Krabappel.
I was thinking of that video where they show these kids like how chicken nuggets are made and like all the goopy stuff coming out. And they're like, now do you still want chicken nuggets, kids? And they're all like, yeah!
Dang.
So these moons aren't real. They're made of chicken nuggets. They don't they don't affect the tides of the Quicksilver Sea. For example, but they do orbit the plane like moons or suns would, and they do so irregularly. So each one moves on its own orbit, its own timing, and even those timings seem to be able to change kind of at will.
Okay, so the horoscopes are fucked on this plane, right?
Yeah, exactly. You really need to rely on them. You really need to check the newspaper because who the fuck knows when Mercury is in retrograde? You know what I mean? Mercury comes and goes as it pleases. Fuck.
I think it's called Quicksilver.
Yeah. Oh, my bad. Yeah. Not Mercury.
that went way over, right over my head.
Extremely good. That's the most cerebral joke we've ever told on this show. So it's possible for all four suns or moons to be overhead at once, while it's also possible for none of them to be, basically.
Okay.
How they operate, again, seems to be dependent on the plot entirely. There is a book, a Magic the Gathering novel called specifically The Moons of Mirrodin, which is where this lore comes from.
Okay.
So the motion of the moons through the sky is, of course, just like in real life on Earth, of great importance to the various peoples of Mirrodin, known as the Mirrens. And most of them respect most the sphere aligning to their principles. So, like I said, there's a red sphere and a white sphere and a blue sphere. So the smart people are like, Blue sun, best sun. You know, angry, emotional people are like red sun, best sun, and they probably fight over it, you know?
And they all come up at different times, so they just start their days at different times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's that one day where all the suns are up at once, the metro, all those tunnels are the worst.
Oh, yeah, so busy, so busy, man. All the lacunae are just like out of control. but, you know, You can actually like get your work done, because if you got a team, a red team, and they're working on the red shift and you're white, it's just like so disorderly, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So the goblins of Mirrodin, for example, would pay reverence to the red sun, which they call the sky tyrant, and they throw wild ragers when the sphere is above Kuldotha, the great furnace, which is a volcano on Mirrodin, a metal volcano. Okay.
So, are they metal goblins or regular goblins?
Irregular goblins.
Okay.
So Karn, yeah, they're regular goblins, and they showed up before Memnarch started kidnapping people. There was some life around, but like okay. The elves specifically, most of them were kidnapped by Memnarch, not native to the plane. I don't think there was any trolls, which is like a random thing that Memnarch loved to kidnap trolls, apparently.
Okay, yeah.
Which is
luring
like,
them out of hiding with like bridges under a little cardboard boxes. Yeah, yeah. And then just like drop the box over the bridge and the troll.
Yeah. So Karn sees these moons rising from the core, basically where he's hanging out, and is like, that's interesting. That's not something I expected to see today. He's just like having
that's
his coffee.
That's not very mathematical of you.
Yeah. So he's like, okay, I got to go figure out what's going on with these time rifts. Time for me to go. Memnarch, you're in charge. Here's the keys, right?
Yeah.
So Memnarch would rebrand when it's left in his care. He calls it Mirrodin. You'll recall, as we've kind of mentioned now, Memnarch is a Pokemon evolution of the Mirari, where they fed him the Silver Stone, and he evolved into Memnarch from the Mirari.
Okay.
Left alone for the first time, Memnarch quickly became a junkie, addicted to the sweet, glistening oil that Karn had carelessly left in the unlocked liquor cabinet. In his father's absence, Memnarch trashed the place and changed the locks on the doors so Karn could not return.
That is how I got drunk for the first time as well. My dad and my stepmom left Stuart and I at home alone, and my buddy Stuart, and we were just like, I'm sure there's booze hidden somewhere. It wasn't hidden.
I went to a friend's place whose parents loved them some drink and would just hot tub all night every time I went to go visit. So we just got very drunk in the basement and they didn't even care.
I had a friend's sister buy it for us, and then we drank it all in the basement.
Hot. Yeah. That explains your fetish for tall women that can toss you over fences. Is older women getting you drunk for the first time?
It explains a lot. I won't lie.
Yep.
Look, we all want to get tossed over a fence by an Amazonian woman, okay?
We all like ourselves a good cougar.
So we talked about this on the last episode, but the Memnarch found this stuff called glistening oil, which is like a relic of Phyrexia, and ended up imbibing it and going crazy. And then this is when he went, full hostage taker, stealing people, trying to take their planeswalker sparks. He blocked Karn from returning to the plane because he thought Karn was already there. So he's just fully crazy.
Oh, he had made like a dummy.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then Karn would have been gone for so long that he started to think that the real Karn was the imposter, exactly. That the dummy with the crudely drawn face on it was actually his dad or whatever.
It was just a Karn brand volleyball, you know? And it's he started to believe that it was Karn.
Now, because he is the evolution of the Mirari, but now, like, I've seen him, and again, I'm a visual person, so I don't know if you'll be able to answer this. Was he like a grotesque spider robot when he evolved, or did the Phyrexian fluid make him worse?
It's hard to tell. I don't know. I don't know if there's any art of him not looking like that.
Okay.
You know, like pre. Yeah. The whole timeline is obviously pretty muddy. A lot of it comes from books, which wouldn't have had art specifically for every given event. So to me, it seems like every iteration of the cards that were printed with art seem to be after he's already lost his mind and he's gone mad and he's the leader of Meriden.
Yeah, because I know like the magic art tends to follow a bit of a timeline sometimes. Like you've got young hot Urza and old Urza and Urza who's just ahead. Like those three cards are three stages in his life. I didn't know if it was the same thing for, because I know the Mirari is a card and I know that Memnarch is a card. I didn't know if there was like an intermediate non-crazy Memnarch card.
The War Turtle phase. There's not. As far as I know, there's not.
Yeah. Like a blue-white instead of a blue-black or whatever the fuck he ends up being.
Yeah. So he goes crazy, changes the locks on the doors. So it seems like the
screen door, but
it seems that the suns rising from Mirrodin's core weren't the only dire portents in effect when Karn left. He didn't see the growing towers of mycosynth, or maybe he was too preoccupied when he left, or maybe he left just before they started sprouting up, but. The core itself began to sprout towers of pure mycosynth, which is a strangely metallic fungal organism. So it's mushrooms, but metal, essentially.
Cool.
From these towers at the core were released spores which spread throughout the plane, changing metal to flesh and causing metallic growths in the skin of organic beings, while giving the artifact creatures above the gift of being living organisms who can die of old age and become diseased. So
thanks.
Yeah, truly Pinocchio had it better as a puppet, am I right?
There's that midpoint stage of Pinocchio where he's like a boy with wooden sores, and that's the very fairy tale.
Things were not looking good for our fresh-faced boy Pinocchio, because Mirrodin was being overrun by our old friends the Phyrexians.
Okay.
Some metal-infused inhabitants of Mirrodin were a perfect breeding ground for the spread of Phyrexian corruption, which made them even stronger at the same time that it corroded their minds and bodies. So, again, artifact creatures like Memnarch, they were fertile soil for the Phyrexian virus, while also being, you know, pretty strong, because machine lift good. but it made them crazy, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid made them lose it a bit, so...
Okay. Yeah.
A couple examples of this, and this is just this is fan service for you fans out there. You know, there's a card, the Darksteel Colossus, and there's a card, the Blightsteel Colossus, and they're the same. So the Darksteel Colossus was before the Phyrexian infection, and then it became the Blightsteel Colossus whenever it was infected. Same goes for the etched Oracle and the etched Monstrosity.
Oh, first it had pissed ins, then it was pissed off.
That is an extra good joke because piston is spelled pissed on, so
yep.
So as the nascent civilization of Phyrexia expanded in secret, it struggled to evolve a unified purpose. And the danger for the plane of Myrdan grew until it evolved into new Phyrexia. So they got to work. Phyrexia did as they do. The whole thing with the main difference is the original Phyrexia had been a unified plane, mostly black magic, under the rule of Yawgmoth. Whereas now it's a plane with five distinct mana profiles and no real single leader. So it's just all this evolving life with, you know, no god to believe in.
And sounds like conflict has to happen. Oh, go ahead.
No, please.
Yeah, it sounds like conflict has to happen. Everything's growing up and under so many different rules. So.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it seems like it's a much more like natural progression, because I don't really know what the Phyrexians are, but they can clearly grow from this fluid. So it really is just like, they are basically like a fungus or a mold. So it's more like a natural progression, like the chaos of evolution and just letting nature, you know, nature like take care of itself instead of having someone responsible go in and destroy it every once in a while. Like
yeah, exactly. Is that what we're doing? Being responsible? Doesn't feel like it.
I mean, I think those trees don't know what the fuck they're planning. They're like cracking up the pavement and shit. That's unsafe. Someone could twist an ankle. Gotta cut them down.
Heaven forfend. So keen on cracking ankles, I guess you could say.
They are true devils.
the Phyrexians, it's kind of a double-edged sword, this evolving into all five manas. So the previous incarnation of Phyrexia, it was all fueled by colorless artifact mana and the black mana of decay and death, like I said. This time, the Phyrexians infiltrated all five colors and thus brought war on all fronts. This had the unintended consequence of factionalizing the Phyrexians based on their color alignment.
Oh.
So even they can't seem to find unity of purpose. Can't cross the mana lines to work together all the time.
So now you basically have like a Phyrexian parliament with there's like four different parties of twisted mechanical horror, all trying to get their own shit done.
Exactly. Except for five different parties, but...
Oh, okay, it was five. Oh, right, sorry, because I minused one in my head and was wrong.
It's minus one moon, but the green mana still exists on Myrdan.
Oh,
The moon simply doesn't exist.
Entirely. No. Yeah. Most like we do in real Canadian politics. We just ignore the Green Party.
I voted green. That feels bad. So there's basically five alignments of Phyrexians now.
Okay.
They work together. To an extent, they all seem to be keen on furthering their own goals for their own reasons. They all kind of want the same goal, which is, you know, Phyrexia overtaking everything. They all seem to be driven by that purpose. It's mostly like, what's the most efficient way to get there that they all seem to differ on? You know what I mean? Where like white's like, oh, you know, we should be super, have a schedule on when we invade which planes and, you know, how we process everybody coming in. Whereas black is like, you're taking all the fun out of it, man. I want to just like, you know, let it happen. Yeah. Black is the ankle twisters and white is the cut down the trees so people don't twist their ankles before we turn them into horrible monsters.
Right, okay. Right. But I mean, you don't want to mix up the hand meat with the foot meat and the thigh meat with the bicep meat and all that crap either.
Yeah, when you're, exactly. Yeah, come on. Yeah. Makes bad sausages.
Great hot dogs, though.
So each alignment gains a praetor to rule over them. Praetor is, I believe, Roman? I actually didn't look up the rank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
A praetor is each of two ancient Roman magistrates ranking below consul. So,
cool. That's another rank that I don't understand.
Yeah, exactly. Do with that information what you will. Yeah. So we're going to go into each of the praetors, the colors that they work with, and kind of how what's the deal with each of these colors, and then we'll probably wrap this episode up.
You're giving the party platform basically for each.
Yeah, it's essentially. Okay. So for white, the white Phyrexians are known as the Machine Orthodoxy. They're led by Elish Norn, who holds the title of Grand Cenobite. I also don't know what Cenobite means. But Cenobites are, they're from Hellraiser. There you go. extra dimensional beings who are mutilated and brainwashed into torturing humans for all of eternity in the labyrinth.
So, cool.
Elish Norn, leader of the White Phyrexians, is known as the Grand Cenobite. You know, I think we can all make some assumptions about what she likes to do.
It doesn't sound good.
She's the White Praetor of Unity. Her philosophy falls in line with the ideal of a fascist unified theocracy. She is currently the dominant praetor. So the in whatever timeline we're looking at, in New Phyrexia, White currently sits at the top of the food chain.
Okay.
They're top dog, if you will.
Okay. So she's managed to get like straighten out the sidewalks, cut down the trees, and is currently kind of dictating to the rest of the Phyrexian praetors. Like, she's got the majority, basically. She won the fights.
Yeah, she wants to twist people's ankles, but she doesn't want random bumps in the sidewalk to do it. She wants to pull people over, you know, take them into a room, twist their ankles manually. Send her back into the population.
Log it, because she's a true bureaucrat.
Exactly.
State twisted ankles is her platform.
So what's a fascist something theocracy?
A fascist unified theocracy. So she
what's a theocracy?
Ruled by a religion. God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So she wants, so again, it's the machine orthodoxy. It's kind of like a religion that they follow. And we'll get it. Well, I have a quick blurb about the machine orthodoxy itself.
Okay.
But basically, she wants
machines are cool because she's a fascist, right? And then
what could turn water into wine other than a machine? It would have to be some sort of machine, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Who can turn water into quicksilver?
Don't drink this. Yeah, so the White Aligned Phyrexians, under the guidance of Elish Norn, are a very literalist religious organization called the Machine Orthodoxy. They worship a form of scripture called the Argent Etchings, but divide themselves into smaller sects. Three of the most prominent sects include the Flesh Singularity, the Porcelain Legion, which sounds toilety, and the Disciples of Karn.
Okay, so I was going to ask if the Argent Etchings were completely misinterpreted notes left behind by Karn before he left the plane.
Yes and no, and I think we'll get a bit more into. I know I keep saying we'll keep doing this on future episodes, but it does make the most sense to talk more about this and more about Karn. We're on the quest for Karn, though, right? That's kind of what this whole thing has been. So we'll find Karn eventually. It is important to know that these Argent Etchings are from Karn, and the white people, the White Phyrexians, obviously relate to Karn, the god of mathematical perfection, because they love order and they love, you know, all this, everything laid out, blah, blah, blah. They you know, they like their ducks in a row, essentially. And Karn was all about predicting, like writing mathematical formulas to predict how ducks would line up. So the Machine Orthodoxy seeks to unify the multiverse as Phyrexia in either a perfect hierarchy or a level playing field. So they're like, we can have individuality as long as it is strictly structured, or everybody's, you know, everybody's the same, no merit, nobody's ranked on merit, perfect communism, or we can have capitalism, but it's got to be regulated. Essentially,
yeah, the kind of enforced equality is where the fascism come from, definitely, with the with their kind of government.
Yeah, exactly.
It's no half measures. Do one or the other, but we do it all the way.
Yeah,
we're doing it perfectly.
No quitters. No quitters in the orthodoxy, baby.
Yeah. So the we'll talk a bit about the sex here. The Flesh Singularity. Sex.
Sex.
Dude, there's 69 different sects. The Flesh Singularity tries to achieve total unity by literally flaying the creatures that inhabit the lands and sewing them back together. So
cool. That reminds me of the Many from System Shock 2, which is essentially the exact same thing. It's like a hive mind that seeks to liquefy all organic matter into its biomass to achieve perfect equality. So that's pretty cool.
There you go. Yeah. System Shock 2 lore coming at you. That's a little bonus tidbit. The Porcelain Legion repurposes and adapts creatures by implanting white metal plates into their bodies. All white Phyrexians have this porcelain-like metal on their bodies. And here, I'll get you a...
You're going to Jamie pull up the clip?
Yeah, I'll get you a picture of the Grand Cenobite herself to
it
show.
It better
you.
Not be a toilet with spooky skeleton arms.
Oh god,
that's what I'm imagining.
In the meantime, I don't know if anybody else out there got For the King on that Epic Game Store for free, but that is a fun turn-based game to play with your friends. Check that out.
Yeah, so I sent you guys the picture of what she looks like, Elish Norn.
She's pretty hot.
Yeah, but those white metal plates that you see on her, like her face is made of these kind of like hammerhead sharking white metal plates that end in sharp tips. All the white Phyrexians have that white metal.
Oh, that's her head. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, dude. You said hot. I was like, sure. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought she was carrying something.
Yeah. She does look like she could throw you over a fence, I'll say.
Yeah. I thought she was looking to the left, not directly at us. Yeah. Those things are huge, man. She's got a giant dome.
Oh, yeah. And the disciples of Karn finally previously held Karn himself hostage at one point, in the hope of pushing him ever deeper into insanity to glean leadership out of his madness. So there's a little sneak peek at what's coming in the future for us. Huh?
My God.
So that's the
weird ambition. Sorry. It's just like, yeah, like the Romans kidnapped Jesus and tortured him to be crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then his mad ramblings became the religion following that.
Yeah. I mean, the hope of pushing him ever deeper into insanity seems very not white to me, like very not white aligned.
Pretty chaotic, yeah.
Because it's like, oh, like what is the flesh singularity you want to do? Like unity of purpose, because we're going to make everybody one person. You know, the Porcelain Legion, everybody has the same hats. Everybody wears the same hats, very orderly. And then these guys are like, we want to make a guy crazy. Why? so he could teach us stuff. it was really weird. I read it. I was like, okay, I don't get it, but sure.
It seems more like a red thing to do.
Yeah, red, even blue. Like, hey, the you know, obviously very smart. Like, well, we'll see how far we can push him as an academic exercise. So let's speaking of blue, let's talk about blue. The blue Phyrexians are part of an organization called the Progress Engine.
That's scary.
They're led by someone named Jin Gitaxius. I'll once more start pulling up clips here. I could have probably prepped all these.
Jin Gitaxius.
Progress Engine sounds like a by any means necessary sort of organization. Yep. This is Elish Norn again.
That is. The copy image didn't work.
They look so similar. Yeah.
Spitting image, one might say.
I don't trust that guy. He looks like something that fucking Todd McFarlane would have created in the 90s.
So, yeah, his fingers have more joints than like most people's limbs. Like, it's weird to look at.
Yeah,
he's got like batwing knuckles and clearly a screaming crocodile head. Like, that's all.
So Jin Gitaxius is known as the Core Augur, the blue praetor of experimentation. He leads his faction towards subversive experimentation to understand and exploit their enemies. So much like blue, he's the guy in charge of dissecting, you know, he's the praetor in charge of learning how the sausage is made.
Okay. You should experiment with a posture check or something, dude.
Yeah, right.
Look at that. Hunched over.
Yeah.
Well, you've got to hunch over constantly to force in all of your meat into your science grinder, and then once you see what comes out of the end, if it's not a sausage yet, you've got to keep grinding up meat.
Is that it?
Yeah.
So blue, they love to experiment, like always. They work out of the ruined halls of somewhere called the Lumengrid. Just part of the blue terrain in Mirrodin. It's a name drop. It's a card, Lumengrid. So it's for the listeners who yeah, exactly. They hold themselves to a higher degree of perfection than the other factions and pursue what they refer to as the Great Synthesis. They conduct experiments in various laboratories scattered across the Quicksilver Sea, described as slaughterhouse-like, creating new life forms and technology.
Okay. So Jamie, you were right. Your constant sausage grinding.
Yeah, never stop sausage grinding. That's what I always say.
ABSG, always be sausage grinding.
Yeah, so they have these slaughterhouses. They're the most organized group so far, with at least 10 observable ranks. So they have a hierarchy where a lot of the other ones, it's kind of like Praetor, everybody else. Except for Black. We'll get into Black. We've actually talked a bit on the last episode about Black. Maybe you guys remember. Maybe you guys don't. But
is the meat shaft?
Yeah, it was in the meat shaft. They met somebody who had a title. Who we all thought was pretty cool, or which we all thought was pretty cool. One of the great experiments, however, that the Progress Engine is working on is called the Meld Web, in which the original pools of insight are filled with the brains of hundreds of sentient beings, all networked together. So they're just linking brains like car batteries, and seeing how much juice they can suck out of those bad boys.
I see. Okay.
They're basically building computers, I guess, in a way, where they're just like a bunch of grains of sand lined up, but the grains of sand to them are human brains.
DDoS somebody else's brain with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a DDoS server for the rest of the multiverse, essentially. That's Blue. Now we can talk about Black, and maybe this will give you guys some insight about who we were talking about. Their organization's called the Seven Steel Thanes. We had met one of the Steel Thanes, essentially, last time. But they're not, weirdly enough, they're not led by a Thane. They're led
by like a Jarl or something? Do they keep those ranks?
No, they're led by a woman named Sheoldred the Whispering One. I sent the post to you guys. Also, could probably throw you over a fence. Sheoldred, the Whispering One, is the Black Praetor of Enslavement. She's the most traditional leader, you know, down to earth, rooted in her people's history. She believes in wholesale slaughter and subjugation. You know what I mean?
Okay, well, that's good.
She is. Everybody gets their ankle twisted. Everybody gets their ankle twisted as soon as we can.
She's like four legs with like teeth down by where a normal person's genitals might be. And then just like a pretty lady sticking out the top, though.
Yeah, like I wanted to ask out, like, which mouth is she whispering from? Is it like the normal looking mouth in her like kind of feminine succubus head, or is it the gigantic reptile mouth that
in the grundle
in her grundle? Exactly.
I mean, shouldn't there be at least a little bit of mystery in a relationship, Peter? Come on.
Yeah, she kind of looks like Asmodan in Diablo 3, except for the pretty lady part.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. She does. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, pretty horrific all in all. For the listeners at home, look up Sheoldred, which, hearing me say it, I'm sure you instantly know how to spell it. It's very, very simple to spell, right? Look up Black Praetor of Enslavement. That probably turns it up, too. Although Praetor itself is also not the most straightforward word to spell, I'm sure you guys will figure
P-R-A.
It out.
P-R-A-E-T-O-R.
That's the one. She's the most traditional leader. She probably had been at the forefront of Phyrexian forces, but her forces were defeated by Elish Norns at some point.
She's more organized.
Yeah, we won't get into the whole warring factions, all that stuff. Too much, just setting the scene for him. But the white Phyrexians are in charge now. The Black Phyrexians probably were in charge, or at least vying for control before they were pretty much entirely decimated by the white Phyrexians.
Okay.
The Black Aligned Phyrexians are out for total and other corruption, slaughter, and enslavement. For the moment, they're led by Sheoldred, but always subject to change in a society which really does value mutation and evolution over anything else.
Someone could poison her mercury drink with, I don't know, clean water at the end of the night. Our lying butler scuttles up and is just like, madam, good night. Good night to you, new Sheoldred, as well. Thank you, madam. Yes. I'm retired to my quarters.
Which mouth does she drink from, though? We'll find out.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's how you get it. Yeah.
It's the one that she doesn't whisper from. So she's at the top of a food chain of Thanes who are all fighting a war of succession to be named the Father of the Machines. So I assume that she's like, hey, I'm like a spider lady. I'm looking for a suitable husband to have sex with, then eat.
of course.
So the Thanes are Kraynox, the Deep Thane, described as masculine. He lords over the corrupting Phyrexian oil and hopes to construct a different fourth layer as a slick oil-covered vista, also known as the many-legged one. So I guess I put this in, I kind of jumped the shark a bit here, but the Phyrexians are creating spheres out of Mirrodin. So there's there's the inner sphere. They create a sphere called the furnace layer, which is where Elspeth and the gang jumped out at the end of the Meat Shaft episode, the last episode.
They fought their way out into that portion of it, right?
They emerge into something called the Great Furnace, and these are like layers in Phyrexia. So they're building like a layer cake out from the center. And there's three right now. There was seven in the original Phyrexia. So they're building it in the image of the original Phyrexia. And he's like, I have an idea for a new sphere. It'll just be oil. Oil as far as the eye can see. Kraynox, is known as the many-legged one. Just because my keyboard's clicky, I'm not going to look up all these for you guys, but feel free to try and spell them and find them.
I like how he's called the many-legged one, despite the fact that the last woman we looked at clearly had six limbs already. It's just like, okay, well, what's the reference here? Is it 20? Is he just a centipede with like a buff dude's torso or something?
Yeah.
Like,
you know, centipedes never have 100 legs, like never do. Because they always
like, I weighed it and he was like, good enough.
Because they have anywhere between 30 and like 300, but it's always an odd amount of body, like spine parts, where they would have two legs coming out. So they might have like 100 or like 100 and something, but never 100. I watched a Vsauce today about it, and he said it a lot better than I did. But
seems like you watched chunk of a Vsauce.
Yeah. Yeah, seems exactly. Like you were playing for the king while you had a Vsauce on in the background. many legs, definitely not 100. We'll say maybe 101, maybe 99, but definitely not 100 legs.
He's a real pop country bro if he wants an entire like oil sphere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's very Texas. Roxith, the Thane of Rot, described as masculine again. He lords over flesh used as a building and sculpting material. So he has like a pile of gooey flesh that he's like, I'm an architect. Frank Lloyd Roxith, the architect. What was it? Ongo Goblogian? Ongo Roxith, the architect. Yeah. He has plans to design the fifth layer of this new Phyrexia made entirely of flesh. So he's like, hey, you know what, Kraynox, buddy? You got an idea for a layer? I got an idea for a layer. What's yours? Pure oil? Pure flesh. Go figure, huh?
The fact that this really does sound like The Bachelorette, considering she's very clearly like modeled up like a queen or a queen bee or something. Yeah. Where she has to give the metallic, like semi, like the cyborg rose to one of these guys at the end of the season. And it's just like, this is all their individual date episodes where it's just like, yeah, I was just hoping that like maybe we could like get together and before you eat me, we could like make an entire sphere out of pure oil or whatever. And so they've all got their different archetype for the Bachelorette.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Pete, so you're setting yourself up for an extra hard arc because not only do you have to draw one character, you have to draw all of them.
Including one with either 99 or 101 legs. We're not sure which.
I just remembered why, by the way. It's the body set. If you had 50, it'll never have 50 body segments, which will always have a leg on each side. It's always an even amount or an odd amount of body segments.
Okay.
So it would be either 51 or 49, which would give you 98 or 102.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
And I want to say, Jamie, I'm glad that you and I are on the exact same wavelength, because as I was speaking that sentence, my conscience was telling me, it's like, Pete, that's going to be a lot of work if they like that. It's going to be hard.
Cool. So all the listeners at home, you guys already know that this is the art, and Pete put in all that extra work, so you're welcome.
I got a real job, so I might take a good extra day, but sure.
the next of the Thanes is Geth, the one that we met. He's Lord of the Vault. The self-described Thane of Steel, Geth's undead severed head was offered a deal to give him a necrotechnical body in exchange for his help in the Phyrexian attempt to gain a foothold on Mirrodin's surface.
Dude, necrotechnical!
As his reward, he was returned his lordship over Isha, the Vault of Whispers. So he was like the mayor of this place, the Vault of Whispers, when it was still Mirrodin. New Phyrexian, under new management, they cut off his head, say, hey, you can have your old job back. And he said, sure, I'll take it. Azax Azog is known as the Demon Thane. He lords over others with fear and brutality. Thrissic, the Writhing Thane, described as a snake. He fought with Roxalith for a while. He believes in an everlasting and ever-improving cycle of destruction and resurrection. So he's like...
Boros.
Yeah, he's like fighting with people like, yo, bro, come on, let's destroy each other so we can like be built into stronger things. And all the other things are like, fuck off, dude. Like, I just want to make my flesh plain.
I wouldn't choose that guy, because if you got to sleep next to him in bed forever and he's just writhing all the time, it's like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hard
sounds
to,
uncomfortable.
No, hard to sleep.
You need to get one of those adjustable mattresses.
Oh, what's your sleep number? Thrissic, the Writhing Thane.
Well, there's your episode title.
The last Thane, the seventh Thane, is Varan, the Thane of Blood. He is a compliated, and I think we talked about compliation. It's just the fancy term for turning something into a Phyrexian. He's a DIY Phyrexian vampire who leads a group of vampiric assassins. Presumably,
why you gotta always be so compliated?
All right, so now that's black. Let's talk about red. The Quiet Furnace, led by Urabrask the Hidden, the Red Praetor of Industry. His philosophy is more industrious than his blue counterpart, building greater and greater artificial monstrosities and weapons. The Red Mana Trait of Independence makes this faction the least like the original hive mind makeup of Phyrexia. So they're the farthest from their forefathers, and he was also destroyed by the White Forces, or gets destroyed by the White Forces eventually. So the red-aligned Phyrexians built the Furnace Layer of Mirrodin. They're the ones that did that work. Based on a similar layer of old Phyrexia. So there was a Furnace Layer. They were like, we had a wood stove at the old place. Really liked a wood stove. Let's build a new wood stove. And Black is like, you want to build it out of pure flesh? And they're like, metal's good. Thank you, though.
The smell.
Yeah. Their primary function was to tend to the forges present there, building weaponry and recycling failed Phyrexians and Mirrens alike. During the war days, they emerged to the surface in the mountains of Mirrodin and expanded onto the surface. So the Furnace Layer kind of broke through to the other layers. While the majority of these Phyrexians still dwell in the depths of the world, several now populate the Oxida chain, beasts designed in the fashion of Mirren animals. So there's Phyrexian animals like now, not just peoples, basically.
Okay, they wanted pets or just like...
Essentially.
A little bit more pastoral, a bit more naturalistic. What if we had like a deer and like some bunnies, but they were all twisted abominations like the rest of them?
But then the abominable deer started to eat too many young trees, which caused the rivers to change. So then they had to introduce Phyrexian wolves to combat the deer populations. It was a very snake or gorilla eat snake situation, if you will.
Lizard snake gorilla situation.
So red Phyrexians also differ from the others in that they have strong emotions, also the independence, like I said, and as such, they actually develop empathy for some of the Mirrens. So these are the only Phyrexians to be like, life, you know, certainly interesting study, but also kind of interesting to leave alone on its own sometimes. While still brutal creatures, their empathy proved strong enough to allow them to let Mirren survivors dwell on their lair, though they kind of just treat them like they don't exist. It's like they don't have dogs, but maybe they have cats. They're just like, it lives in my apartment with me. You know what I mean? Feeds itself.
Okay.
You know, shits in a box. They're fine.
Shits.
To hide this secret, as well as to avoid having to deal with other factions, Urabrask demanded that all access to the Furnace Layer be denied to the other factions, isolating himself and his servitors. The surface Phyrexians in the mountains serve as guardians to the entrances to the Furnace Layer.
So he's hiding the fact he has like a stray cat from the Bachelorette.
Yeah, exactly. Mom would never let him keep it, you know. It's got worms. It's always rubbing its ass on the carpet. It's just a big mess.
Yeah. I hope they poked holes in the sphere so that it could breathe.
So for the most part, the other factions ignore the Quiet Furnace, with the exception of the Progress Engine, Blue, who is super paranoid about them. The dwarves... dig too greedily and too deep under that mountain of theirs.
Yeah, but the progress engine, also the fact that they're like the intellectuals, but like intellectuals taken to like an uncomfortable extreme would make them easily the most paranoid faction, obviously, because they're constantly in their own fucking heads.
Exactly.
Turning against each other and everyone else.
Yeah. I mean, their whole thing is killing people and repurposing them. They must constantly be thinking about, oh, other people want to kill us and repurpose us, right?
Yeah. And they don't have any empathy, so it's the only thought process that they understand.
Yeah, they have to buy all the gold before the economy collapses and whatnot.
I just realized I didn't send you guys a picture of Urabrask, so I threw that in the chat, and we'll move on to green. The Vicious Swarm, led by Vorinclex, the Voice of Hunger. The Green Praetor of Predation.
Okay, so the bestial. He's the sexy Tarzan for Phyrexian.
Sure, yeah. I did post a picture of him in chat, too. You can decide if that's sexy Tarzan enough for you.
He looks like a Zerg.
Yeah, very Zerg-like.
Yeah.
Both of them do.
All of them kind of do a little, right?
Yeah, like Urabrask looks like what are the flying ones? That
you Mutalisk.
I mean, he looks like a Mutalisk, and then I don't know what the second guy
He's
really
looks
like. He's
got like a Hydralisk face, but not really the body.
Yeah.
Got exposed bones though. See, he's got the chicken wing bone. When you clear the meat in the middle, he's got that as forms.
Yeah. This is great audio drama for people who also don't know StarCraft and don't know Magic the Gathering and just have no idea what we're talking about here. They're all spooky boys made of like bone and repurposed parts, it looks like.
Right.
So Vorinclex believes most in survival of the fittest, which is kind of an easy a short leap, if you will, to eugenics. Killing those deemed to be weak, augmenting the great predators of Mirrodin.
He's like a kind of like a cybernetic Spartan in that kind of way. Like they're throwing babies off cliffs and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got Vor in his name as well, so he's probably also has like tiny women walk into his mouth as a fetish.
Or tiny women. Maybe both.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We didn't ask.
So the Green Line Phyrexians were among the first to strike. After, you know, Mycosynth is spreading, all these Phyrexians are gaining power, but a lot of them are kind of just like idly building their forces. The Green were some of the first ones to go. They were like, hey, survival of the fittest, it's now or never, baby. Hit the gas. They dominated the Green-aligned countryside of Mirrodin, known as the Tangle, quickly. Like all Phyrexians, the members of the Vicious Swarm believe that flesh is weak, but unlike the other Phyrexians, they believe that new Phyrexia should progress in a more natural way, based on the rules of predation, allowing the strong to emerge triumphant over the weak. So they're like...
But that's like natural themed, that it's like the flesh is weak, but we should go in a natural way, but not with any kind of nature, it should all be machines.
Yeah, yeah, all be machines. It's more like amongst each other, I think. And I mean, I assume they see themselves as natural, right? Like... everybody would have to. But I think it's more like, hey, like you guys are doing all these weird experiments and like playing with things. We should just fight until like the strong ones emerge, you know, and then we'll eventually get the strongest ones out of us.
Okay.
And those people can be in charge, you know, which obviously is very not white. White is like, we can have a hierarchy, but it's got to be ordained. People got to vote, you know? It's got to have a system.
There's no paperwork in the jungle and I don't fucking like it.
Yeah. So they believe that artificial engineering should be restricted to making predators more efficient, and that sentience and sapience are curses, inadequate when compared to the raw power of instinct. They're like, stop making things smart. We don't need more smart things. We've got enough smart things. Lacking any sort of...
terrible idea.
Lacking any sort of organization whatsoever, they are merely a massive variety of creatures that kill each other for the purpose of selecting the strongest.
Okay. So I'm imagining much more like a bunch of just like biomechanical white guys with dreadlocks.
Yeah. So you might think red normally the most chaotic, but green for Phyrexians, definitely the most chaotic.
Okay.
There is, of course, hope for Mirrodin. As we know, there is a resistance. The Mirren Resistance are the remnants of the Mirrens that continue to be alive or uninfected after the compilation of Mirrodin. They're composed mainly of Ariok, Volshok, Goblin, Leonin, all these different furry people, survivors who were native to the plane, along with the last remaining Moriok, Nurok, Silvok, Elf, Loxodon, and Vidalkin inhabitants of the plane who were brought there by Memnarch.
Are Loxodon elephant people?
Loxodon are elephant people. Good guess.
Ah, thank you.
most of the survivors who are at the later stages of Phyresis often die in the camps while they are cared for by those who are less sick. others being the incorruptible who are immune to the effect of phyresis. So there is kind of just this, the spores are still in the air. You know, most people aren't Ellie from The Last of Us, but there are some people like Ellie from The Last of Us who just, they don't get sick. The resistance itself has no centralized leadership and instead are led by Koth, who's kind of a on the wing leader, who you will recognize. He is one of the incorruptible. He's immune to the phyresis. And you'll recognize him as somebody who was forced to leave Mirrodin in search of a final fix to the bug problem the plane has been experiencing.
Right.
So that's new Phyrexia. Like I said, I might diverge again next week before we get back to our Intrepid Explorers. I'm not sure. If it's not such an interesting story, the Moons of Mirrodin, talking about Glissa and the death of Memnarch, I might just jump back to smash cut back to live. And we can jump in with Elspeth on the Furnace Lair in the search for Karn. So I guess my task for you listeners at home is to let us know which you'd prefer. Let me know which you'd like. Still a few days to slam an email in there. I promise we'll read it on air. Or just dumb comments if you guys want to leave comments in Discord for us to read and just call it out. Say like, hey, say this on air. We'll probably say it, unless it's like really shitty of you. we'll probably say it on air. So all the info you need is at loreboys.com/about. Do head there and get in touch with us, please. 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 Now, please, Peter, what do you want to talk about today?
The only important link that's not on the website is at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. Check in for all of our title cards and send us little messages and shit. I love getting contacted through Instagram. It's always nice. I was sent some stories from... Well, one of the boys in Toronto, as far as I know, that's where he lives, which was just like, send us your memes wherever you find them. Discord is always the best place. But yeah, the Instagram is the only like non-browser based thing that you need to know about that you can't find on the about section of the loreboys.com.
You definitely can. It's there. Loreboys.com/about. Instagram's there. Takes you to the browser version of Instagram, which I hear...
Nobody fucking uses that.
I hear sucks, but I think if you do it on your phone, it'll probably automatically open up the Instagram.
Oh, yeah, that's probably true.
Jamie, do you have anything you would like to add?
J-A-Y-M-I-L-K, J-Milk on Steam. Buy me games, I'll play them with you.
Buy
you got a recommendation for skin cream?
Games, damn it. Anybody who wants to spend their money in ways other than buying James games on Steam, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. Head over. We have a couple tiers. We're not always great on fulfilling our promises, but we promise we love you for it. And if you ever remind us to do the things, we'll do them right away. It's just easy to forget sometimes. But yeah, you can head to not loreboys.com/patreon, but patreon.com/loreboys. And you'll see, you can head to loreboys.com/about to get the link to it. And you can give us money if you like the show. Thanks so much to everybody who already supports the show.
Fresh patrons this week as well. So
do we?
Both.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll pull up their names. Do you want to come up with a Loreboys Prime real quick?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we always discuss this in advance to understand like what the coupon is. Obviously it's just kind of like convenient that they're always kind of related to the episode. Mm-hmm. But if you want to support Loreboys Prime this week, you can send us, we don't need money in Prime this time. What we want is we want your bachelor videos. So if you want to, if you're somebody who's looking for love and what you want is a spider-based woman with two mouths, just send us your profile. It's got to be 30 seconds long, between 20 and 30 seconds. Send us that. Good audio is more important, but then you can send us your measurements, what your skin density is like, because that might come in handy at some point.
Definitely need to know skin thickness, please.
Yeah. Our props department's kind of lacking too, so if you could send us any meat and or metal roses, that would be great too.
Yeah. Exactly. It's for a big arts and craft project. If you wanted to send us like pounds of elbow macaroni, also great, but like more... Like more or less, we just like send us your video dating profile, VHS if you can. We really don't want DVDs at this.
Phyrexian's elbow macaroni would be actual elbows.
Elbows. Yeah. any extra or unnecessary organs you might have. If you have a third eye, we'll just pop that sucker out. We'll take the third eye. If you still have your appendix, the doctors don't want you to know this, but you don't need that bad boy. Send it our way. You got two kidneys. Who needs a second one?
getting wet, though. So package it separately from the actual dating VHS. I think is really important.
Can I just say I would love if all our listeners actually sent us dating videos? Well, in the mailbag episode, if you guys want to bachelor yourselves for us, we'll watch it on Twitch and react to it probably.
I would kill for that. Oh my god.
Two new patrons, and by two new patrons, I think I mean one, because I think we mentioned Connor on the last episode, but shout out again to Connor, and can I play two on Patreon? Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you so much.
And that probably constitutes a Lore Boys Bachelor.
Oh.
Goodbye. Bachelor's degree.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.